Good day to you. This is episode 11 of the Laser Guided Melodies Music Reviews podcast. I'm Lauren James, and with me, as ever, is Ed Biggs.
Good evening.
We're taking a look at the best and biggest new releases from the week starting the 19th and the 26th of May. We've got clips from two number one albums, Coldplay's Ghost Stories and Sam Smith's In the Lonely Hour, as well as a rather wonderful new record by Sharon Van Etten. Mm-hmm. At the end of the show, just before we say goodbye, we're also going to introduce an album of the fortnight feature, where we'll recommend the best three releases of the 2 weeks we cover on each episode. Mm-hmm. Album anniversary section, we'll be analysing and playing clips from two albums, Bruce Springsteen's blockbuster, Born in the USA, mm-hmm. and The Killers' Hot Fuss. In the meantime, you can also visit our website for more album reviews from the last 2 weeks, which includes Connor Oberst from Bright Eyes, The Brian Jonestown Massacre, The Sunshine Underground, The Roots, Echo and the Bunnymen, The Pains of Being Pure at Heart, The New Wolf Alice EP, and the all-Scandinavian collaboration album between Royksopp and Robin. Mm. Find all those by typing in laserguidedmelodies.co.uk into the address bar of your browser.
Mm-hmm. Very proper, very 60s. Very good evening. This is from this broadcasting from the BBC. And now the news at 10. Right. So, onwards.
New tracks.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of it's a new / old tracks one, this one.
Sonore, as it's the World Cup in roughly a week's time, we were going to bring you a clip of the official track by Gary Barlow, Feet, Random Pop Stars and Footballers, but it's been cancelled by the FA, and frankly, Ed's words, it's awful.
No, it is awful. It's terrible.
Instead, Acid Ed is going to take over the opportunity to play you the only genuinely good football song ever released, in inverted commas.
Trademark.
World in Motion by New Order. World in Motion by New Order there. A testament to how excited
This, your attempts to find a nickname for me simply isn't working.
El Editoro. Yeah. Ed Bigzaro. Is how excited he is feeling towards the upcoming month of football.
Yeah. 1 month and 1 day. 3 or 2 football matches per day for all that time.
He's feeling red in the face with excitement.
World in Motion is probably the first ever instance of football and music going together.
Didn't you like that Four Lions song?
Three Lions.
Yeah, that one.
That one. Well, that was okay.
Who sang that?
That was Badil Skinner and The Lightning Seeds.
Did you like that one?
It was good.
I'd say that's one of the more memorable ones.
Yeah, but yeah, it's more memorable. I think World in Motion is kind of like the critic's choice, largely because they were a band in form at the time. And because of the John Barnes rap as well, which is brilliant. And yeah, basically, football songs have a very long and checkered history. Practically none of them are good. Vindaloo by Fat Les, that was good. That was one of Keith Allen's ones as well.
Nice. I've thought a lot of our listeners might not be fully converted to your Church of Gary Barlow hatred. So what made this year?
It's not my church, it's the Church of Gary Barlow hatred.
Of which you subscribe to.
Yeah, but not for the tax dodging reason, largely because he's so totally ubiquitous.
Yeah, so what made his song
he's
so
musical
bad?
Beige wallpaper.
Please explain.
It had Gary Lineker on it, had Emma Bunton on it, and it was a re-recording of something he'd done before. And yeah, the FA commissioned it, listened to it, and binned it because it was so crap. which kind of tells you we need to know about it. We're not going to inflict it upon your ears, dear listeners. But
seek it out.
Matthew Langham and I are going to be writing a small sort of listicle about sort of the checkered history of football songs. So be looking out for that on our website. Anyway, we're going to move on to new albums now. What have we got first, Lauren?
Well, the second half of May saw the release of two highly anticipated records. First of which, Coldplay's 6th album, Ghost Stories. We'll get Ed's take on it straight after this clip. Will they be ranting? Stay tuned. This is Oceans.
behind the walls now, trying to change, and I'm ready for a ball, I'm ready for a change. Amen.
Okay, that was Oceans from Ghost Stories, Coldplay's sixth album, which has stormed the charts in its first week of release, which was last week, I think.
The 16th.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Well, let's get the conscious uncoupling aspect of this out of the way before we get anything else done.
It has to be said.
Yeah.
To give this album any context.
Basically, Chris Martin split up with his long-term wife, Gwyneth Paltrow, about a month before this album's release. Consequently, it's more or less impossible to see this new album outside of the context of other breakup records, such as Hear My Dear, 808s and Heartbreak, For Emma, Forever Ago, even Blood on the Tracks, which that Dylan masterpiece is generally held to be sort of the best breakup album ever made. But frankly, this new record just makes just as much sense if you see it as a return to kind of basic principles for Coldplay. It seems to exist in this kind of icy permafrost, perpetual late evening gloom, doesn't it? This album, and in that respect, it's quite like Parachutes, where the space between the notes and what is not said is just as profound as what Coldplay actually play and sing. It's all about atmosphere.
A lot of the melodies are recycled, I noticed.
Yeah,
it isn't a bad thing. It's just them applying their tried and tested formula to a new album.
Yeah, it feels like a suite of songs, isn't it? Rather than sort of something that you can sort of cut up and listen to on shuffle mode. It feels a bit more coherent.
Yeah. It's always going to go down as the breakup album, though, so it might as well relish in its title. Well,
yeah. Besides, it doesn't really feel like a breakup album, because Chris Martin doesn't really make that much of a connection. He just sings in these kind of broken couplets for quite a lot of it. And the music is much more focused on texture and minimalism. It's a very stark and noticeable reversal of what happened on Milo Xylotto, which was their previous album, which was just a glossy blancmange of a record, wasn't it?
I'm glad all the ripped blazers have gone.
Well, and you can see just on the front cover how different it is. Milo Xylotto was sort of garish, multicoloured, neon colours on the front cover, and this one's just kind of a very plain, navy, dark blue cover. It's a very laudable attempt at tweaking the formula, and there's not much joy to the record, I'd say, but you suspect that. But the penultimate song, there's that Avicii-produced one, which does sort of throw a bit of sort of light in the end of the tunnel.
I think they could have done without that one. Yeah.
So do I. It's almost too bright. You kind of like flinch away. It's like when you spend all day indoors and with sunglasses on, and then you take them off, you open up the window, you sort of flinch for a second before your eyes adjust.
Up to that point, I feel
it doesn't work very well.
Up to that point, I feel like the album would have appealed to people who were bored of. You know, vanilla is a word that gets attributed to Coldplay a lot.
Beige.
Yeah, any of those words. And before the Avicii track, it felt like, especially with songs like, is it Midnight?
Midnight, yeah. Oceans as well. Yeah. That was it was just kind of a bleeping sort of lonely synth.
They're not
and
joyful,
acoustic guitars.
But at certain points, like the high of the synths on Midnight is quite euphoric.
Yeah.
There's something in that which, the first time I listened to it, I definitely got a bit of a tingle.
Well, and kind of and Magic as well, even though it is kind of a pale attempt to try and do a Massive Attack song.
Trip hop suits Coldplay, though.
I think you and I might have to differ on that one.
I quite like the album, to be honest.
As a comparator to another Coldplay album, it's about as good as X and Y, but X and Y only seemed disappointing because of what came before it. It's a good solid 6 out of 10. Not quite the spectacular sort of monolithic breakup album that I suspect many people want it to be. But if you see it outside of that context, and you can see it as a good attempt for Coldplay just to try and get back to basics.
Yeah, well, it was never going to be a breakup album in terms of like shit slinging his ex.
Yeah.
But there's some very sad emotion conveyed. Dark emotions.
So, that's Coldplay. And that was number one, and...
No, it's not. It's Sam Smith now and his debut record, In the Lonely Hour, which has become the fastest-selling debut of this year so far. While you ponder on that, here's a clip of I'm Not the Only One, and then we'll chat about it.
can't believe you let me down. But the proof's in the way it hurts. For months on end, I've had my doubts.
Sam Smith's I'm Not the Only One from rather well received in the Lonely Hour. Why is it so good?
Well, to be honest, Sam Smith has been quite inescapable so far. Not only this year, but last year as well. 2013, of course, saw him hook up with Disclosure for Latch and for Naughty Boy on La La La. And this year, he's racked up two number one singles already, in addition to both of those. And they both feature on this debut album, In the Lonely Hour. It's a record designed to showcase his rather extraordinary sort of blue-eyed soul kind of voice, which is able to amplify kind of the vulnerability at the heart of the record. Because Smith has said this is about unrequited love, hasn't he? About a guy he met and fell in love with last year, but didn't love him back.
That's been touted around a lot, so it's a big PR point for the album. You know, this is raw emotion, this is Sam Smith directly, and it's his songs.
Yeah. But the real problem is the music. I mean, his record label so clearly want this record to follow in the footsteps of 21 by Adele, which was a fantastic, powerful record, and Emily Sandé's Our Version of Events, which wasn't.
Olympic flashbacks.
Yeah, basically, with the exception of two quite beat-laden tracks, one of which is Money on My Mind, that was a number one single, and there was a track on it called Life Support as well. The music is very conservative. The strings are polished, the piano is delicate. Nothing intrudes upon sort of Smith's voice, and it just doesn't work as well as it should. But I must emphasise, this is a fault of construction, this is the fault of the record company, not of Smith himself, whose voice is pretty unique. But I just get the feeling that, you know, this is clearly a set of songs that mean a lot to him personally, but if he just held his nerve throughout the process and gained control of it, and I suspect that he didn't, because there's a lot of producers getting involved with this record and a lot of other writers sort of weighing in and trying to help him flesh out his vision, he could have made something a lot more distinctive and less conservative. It just feels a bit like missed opportunity, because besides which, the kind of music that's on this album, it doesn't lend itself to those kind of distinctive vocal hooks that made La 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 and Latch so catchy. I mean, those were just even if you didn't like them, you just couldn't get them out of your head. They were just so hummable. But this kind of soul-based tracks don't have that.
Because so, it's very clean soul.
Yeah, it's very, very squeaky, very clean, very polished.
Kind of,
it could have been a lot better and a lot rawer.
It could be, you know, the soundtrack to a moderately emotional scene of Hollyoaks.
that's we're going to compare television montages. It's no Closing Ceremony,
the kind
is
of music the X Factor would be proud to produce.
I'd say it's there's nothing wrong with the album per se. It's just it could have been a lot better, and I awarded it 5. But there's a lot of potential in there for him to make a really great album in the future.
If he just
holds his own with his producers and people around him, and sort of puts his foot down and doesn't let anyone else interfere with his vision, because he's got the voice for to make something special.
Yeah. Well, you've by giving him that 5, which is fair, I'd say, you've given him space to improve.
Yeah. Well, he's pretty good album. Could have been better.
Yeah. Should we move on?
Yep.
Well, finally, Sharon Van Etten has released her 4th record, Are We There? She released it last week, and it's currently sitting at number 27. Not exactly the skyscraping limits of Sam Smith's album, but a whole lot more interesting. So here's a clip of I Love You, But I'm Lost.
To know somebody in and out after a while, it's a challenge. Coming here and be yourself again. I love you, but I'm not somebody who takes shots.
So that was I Love You, But I'm Lost from Sharon Van Etten's 4th record, Are We There?, which was released last week.
Well, it's a follow-up to a very well-received breakthrough back in 2012, which was called Tramp, which was recorded with the National's Aaron Dessner. It's a pretty solemn affair, isn't it? it's kind of built from the same musical material as Cat Power and St. Vincent and Anna Calvi. These kind of
bigger sound than all of those, but yeah, in the same vein.
Yeah, they have quite grandiose structures. They seem, even though you're just hearing for the first time, they already seem quietly derelict and forgotten as soon as they've been built. Mm. They kind of seem hauntingly familiar as well. If you think of the late night barroom intimacy of Ryan Adams' Gold, and you're getting close to the kind of ambience that's on the record.
Yeah, sultry and heartbreaking.
Yeah, she's got a very sort of solid voice, which somersaults around quite a lot. It's very expressive and is like the engine of the songs on occasion, quite like Joni Mitchell in that respect, where her voice is the thing that keeps the song going. There's that line in the closing song, "I wash your dishes but I shit in your bathroom" as well, which kind
that
of
surprised
it
me.
Leaps out as well, but it seems funny and sort of quite affecting, even though it's quite scatological. And that talent to kind of twist the mundane into something profound is something that she shares with St. Vincent and with Joni Mitchell and quite a lot of other female singer-songwriters, at least the good ones that are out there. And there are plenty.
She's not scared to be controversial, I think. You know, she doesn't want to be this sexualized version of a pop star.
Yeah. On the same song, she says, "You call me a one-hit wonder."
She's a real person.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the record. It hangs together well. It is kind of oppressive at times if you listen to it just for the first time. It requires a bit more concentration than sort of most albums require, but yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's a triumph for follow up. I gave it 8.
Nice.
Yeah.
Another 8.
We have got quite a lot of 8s so far this year. I have to sort of dial down my praise in the
future. When you've got to give an 8, you've got to give an 8.
Exactly.
Why pretend it's anything different? And now we are on to the anniversaries. Big birthdays, big albums. Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA was released 30 years ago on June the 4th, which is yesterday.
Yeah. It went on yesterday to as we're recording it, probably not as you're listening
to it. It went on to sell 30 million copies around the world. That's nothing, really.
Quite a lot. Wow. I'm going to tell that to Bruce. I'll tweet him.
Produced a record.
Lauren says that's nothing.
Record equaling 7 US top 10 singles. For your enjoyment, here are clips of Cover Me, Bobby Jean, and its first single, Dancing in the Dark. The Boss there with Cover Me, Bobby Jean, and Dancing in the Dark from Born in the USA. Needs no introduction, really.
Yeah, I mean, not really. I'm pretty sure everybody in the world would be able to recognise the front cover of Born in the USA. It's just one of those sort of...
Hand in the jeans.
Yeah, baseball cap in jeans and American flag in the background. It's an image that summed up Springsteen's career up until that point, where a lot of his songwriting concerned relatable blue-collar characters in everyday situations who are struggling either with their consciences or against authority figures. His previous record, which was called Nebraska, which was released in 1982, that was recorded almost entirely by himself with an acoustic guitar. And the cast of characters on that album, they were losers, deadbeats and criminals that had absolutely no hope of salvation. In the title track of that album, the character goes to the electric chair. It just and nothing good happens. You think salvation is around the corner and it just doesn't arrive. And that is one of the bleakest records ever released by an artist on a major label. It was tantamount to career suicide. But 2 years later, you have Born in the USA, and the first track in, the title track, the difference just couldn't possibly be more noticeable,
so
could it?
The whole album, even though it has these darker, sadder moments on it, it's just not pretentious. It doesn't wallow in its sadness. It gets on with it and just goes, yeah, America.
Yeah, you're correct. There is a defiance and a stoicism and about the characters. Even though they are in the same situations, there is the hope of salvation around the corner. They're, like I say, there is a sadness to them, like Dancing in the Dark and Glory Days and Bobby Jean, but that sort of, that kind of inner sadness is enveloped in warm, radio-friendly organ sounds, isn't it? Like, you know, dun, 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 dun. That's Glory Days, basically, yeah. Isn't it?
It's basically, it's like nothing.
It's not triumphant and chest beating. Mm. It's on the verge of being that, but it's just human. It's got a connection.
Yeah. I think what makes it so great is that it's a music that's definitely dated. No one really makes music like that anymore, and so it's evocative.
Well, except the Gaslight Anthem.
Time. Yeah, but even them, it's not the same. It's
distinctively Springsteenian.
Yeah. And that's what's great about it, I think.
Yeah, it never crosses into the line to morbidity or being depressing, even though the themes are quite sad.
It's just brilliantly unpretentious.
Yeah, I saw him last summer. He played quite a lot of songs off it, and just got the crowd off their feet all the time.
Become accustomed to doing these monster 3-hour sets, just playing as many songs as possible.
Oh yeah. And the public responded overwhelmingly. Like Lauren said in the interview, it sold 30 million copies around the world. I mean, he was big beforehand, but it turned him from an American rock star into a global superstar. It, you know, 15 million in the US alone. Spent 84 consecutive weeks in the US top 10. It was the biggest seller of 1985, the year after its release, and it was even in the top 20 sellers of 1986. The 7 US top 10 singles it contains is a record that is only shared by Michael Jackson's Thriller and by Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation 1814. In addition, the critics love it. Nobody's got a bad word to say about it. It's always in the list of the top 100 of all time, along with 1975's Born to Run, which is, I'd say, is probably a better album than Born in the USA, but only just. The statistics that Born in the USA has are just astonishing. It's the kind of cultural ubiquity that doesn't come along very often. It's extremely rare, and if an artist has it, he only has it once in his career before it goes.
It made him.
It did. I mean, that's the Springsteen everyone associates with. Yeah, a monster seller, influential, touched a lot of people's hearts. Find someone out there who's got a bad word to say about it, and I'll show you a liar. So, what have we got next?
The Killers with Hot Fuss. The 10th anniversary of this.
I can't believe that's
debut.
10 years old.
On June the 7th, so 2 days from now.
Yeah.
Here's a couple of clips. We haven't chosen the most obvious ones, as I'm sure you'll thank us for.
Yep.
So here's Jenny Was a Friend of Mine and Andy, You're a Star. Killers Hot Fuss, feeling as fresh as the day it was released. You just heard Jenny Was a Friend of Mine and Andy, You're a Star. We just happened to choose the two tracks with names on. But
Yeah, there are quite a lot of names. There's Believe Me Natalie as well, isn't there?
That's yeah.
Right, so one of the biggest selling debuts of the last 10 years, and it's 10 years old. I can scarcely believe it. I can remember buying this album.
Yeah.
the key to its success is built around a spine of four singles, which all appear consecutively on the record. Mr. Brightside, which I'm pretty sure that nobody else needs to hear again. Smile Like You Mean It, Somebody Told Me, which I think is probably the best record on the album, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think it's the best one they've done to date, to be honest. Yeah. Best single.
And All These Things That I've Done, which is kind of sort of an indie bohemian rhapsody, isn't it? It just goes through all these sort of little phases in the song.
Well, the best thing about those songs is that with a single line, you have the chorus of them, so they connect with people in a certain way. You know, they're not called anything abstract. You hear Mr. Brightside, you go, I'm Mr. Brightside.
Yeah, I know. It's just it's a Pavlovian reaction, isn't it? I just hear those chords and I flinch at it because I've just heard it so many times now. Mm. Well, in truth, every single song on it could have been a single release. The Killers' appeal has always resided in their ability to basically play dress up, you know, to do karaoke and imitate other bands. They're the world's most varied tribute band. On Hot Fuss, they use British 80s influences. New Order, The Cure, Echo and the Bunnymen, Duran Duran, and Brandon Flowers takes his showmanship and his vocal stylings from Morrissey, both in and out of the Smiths.
And that is why they were big here before they broke America.
Exactly. Hot Fuss didn't translate in America. I mean, they're from Las Vegas, and apparently they used to sort of fight each other for copies of the NME in the 90s. I mean, that's how enthralled they were to...
And now they're just big everywhere.
Yeah, to British 80s music. I mean, it seems unlikely, doesn't it? You know, four kids in Las Vegas dreaming of rainy 80s Manchester. But,
world away. It does.
I did like this album because it proved to be a very useful gateway album for other fans to access material that they'd never heard before. Like I said, like Echo and the Bunnymen, like The Cure, like New Order. Mm. It performed that kind of function as well, as well as just being a really great and versatile
chart
listen.
Friendly.
Yeah.
Very chart.
It spent 179 weeks in the top 40 in here. It's one of the top 100 sellers of all time. And that's because the singles were spread out nicely. I mean, it sold copies well into 2006. Mm. But the Killers have kind of gone in ever-decreasing circles since. I mean, Sam's Town, which was 2 years later, it basically did the same dress-up thing, apart from they used Springsteen, Tom Petty, and Joshua
Tree.
Very
different sound.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Yeah, but
I think it worked.
Not quite as well because
not quite as well because
at that point I think a lot of people began to realise this is the Killers just doing dress up but with different music again. They are the world's best karaoke band, best jukebox band. But because they have this tendency, they always try and do it with other people. You never really get a sense of who the Killers are, and that is their biggest fault. But that shouldn't diminish Hot Fuss, which remains a great debut album. A lot of people have very fond memories of it, myself included.
It defined a lot of my early teenage years, I'd say. Mm. It came out, you know, it hit just at a time when I was really discovering music.
Yeah.
And that, you know, Mr. Brightside, it's still played at the end of club nights for, you know, last emotional moment, but it was...
And all these things that I've done.
Yeah, it felt like, for a lot of young people at the time, and probably still... It felt like the Killers were soundtracking an important moment of your life. And that's why, even though it's very tired now, it rang true at the time.
Well, they can make nonsense lines like, I've got soul but I'm not a soldier, somehow seem profound. I mean, like Bill Bailey says, I mean, it doesn't actually make sense once you think about it. And again, their dress-up tendencies, they practically give the game away on glamorous indie rock and roll, don't they? Mm. They just... That's the whole Killer's secret, busted wide open, isn't it?
Yeah.
You and me, looking for a thrift store magazine or something like that, isn't it? That's how the lyric goes. Mm. Some critics were very sniffy at it when it was initially released. Robert Christgau just simply said, "If only a flock of seagulls could have done their hair," that was his whole review of it. It's a bit harsh, but
they did have very good hair. Still do.
I'm not really that much a fan of the Killers, but I do like this album a lot.
Do you like the hair?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Wonderful. That's just about all we have time for this week. Mm. In a week or two, whenever we get round to it, we'll return for episode 12.
Yeah.
Hosted by both of us. As usual, we'll be talking about significant music news and new tracks. We'll be reviewing new records and some classic albums. You can look forward to us talking about the new Jack White record, Lazaretto, and the new Passenger record, and the debut album by Clean Bandit, as well as the second record by Parquet Quartz.
Yeah.
There are also albums coming out by 50 Cent, The Orwells, Bob Mould, Kyla LaGrange, Tom Veck, First Aid Kit, and James. If we're not talking about them next time, they will definitely be reviewed on our website, which you must definitely 100% always don't forget to type in the address bar of your browser. We'll also be looking at Nirvana's debut album, Bleach, which turns 25 on the 15th of June, which of course preceded the more famous Nevermind. If you've enjoyed our jovial, sometimes incomprehensible chatter and pretentious analysis and would like to join in the conversation, you can like us on Facebook at Laser Guided Melodies and be our friend forever. Mm. You can find us on Tumblr, which is where we post all our reviews, by searching the same thing. Or you can follow us on Twitter, which is updated regularly with new news and excitement, by searching for @LG Melodies.
That's it. That's
also, check out Ed, This Is My Jam, shameless plug, where he talks about other significant records that pass milestones. So until next time, toodle pip.
Bye-bye.